Lean Leadership Podcast, episode 63.
This is the Lean Leadership Podcast. Equip yourself with the tools for success in your team's lean journey by learning from the world's top lean professionals. Listen at the risk of improving with your host, Chris Burnham.
Today's guest is Jeff Koss. I've had several guests of the podcast encourage me that I need to speak to our guest today. When I reached out to Jeff about being on the podcast, he emailed me back and said, "Let's chat first. I want to get to know you." We ended up having one of the coolest conversations that I've had in my entire lean journey. I wish that I had pressed record and had that conversation to share, but I'm really pleased to share our scheduled interview because Jeff is a leader that just leads in a different way and is one of the most humble company presidents that I've ever met. Jeff is president of Koss Tailored, our company that focuses on upholstery solutions and design services and now produces PPE in Muckle, TO, Washington. In the mid-90s, they were offered to learn lean from an airplane manufacturer in Washington that they were a supplier to. That led Koss Tailored to take one of the first of several learning trips to Japan that transformed the way that they approach their people and their work in their company and how they teach other companies to do the same. Now, several decades later, they are doing incredible work and have a team that is, quote, committed to creating a culture of continuous improvement so that our workplace can be one of joy and learning. Here's our guest, Jeff Koss. Okay, well, Jeff, thank you for being with us today. We briefly touched on who you were in the intro, but can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and how lean and continuous improvement is a part of your life?
Yeah, happy to. And thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to hanging out with you. About myself, I'm just a guy who's been in a family business. I'm second generation. I've been working here since I was 15. I'm 54 now, so people can do math on that. My background is just we were a tiny business, I went to the university, and my dad had this business. I thought, wow, I can learn everything under the sun in a small business, and he allowed me to come work with him, and through the years, we built it into something a little bit bigger. And my background in lean is just when I was 30 years old, my dad gave the business to my marriage. I wouldn't accept it to me as a dude, which is super stupid as a 30-year-old. I have no idea why I did that. But anyhow, he was giving it to me. And at 30 years old, I didn't know anything. I didn't know if I was good at anything. I had three kids. I was just trying to survive being a parent. And then now I had responsibility for 50 souls in this business that we had. And so at the time, Boeing was a customer of ours. And they're like, "We're going to teach you lean." And the basic idea there was, I'm going to go learn that. And I'm going to learn that in Japan. And so we started getting people helping us. And yeah, that was a early start. And I guess the way it ties into my dad is I took him on the first trip and he said, "Yeah, dummy, what the heck did you learn in college?" So that was day one. And we were off to the races.
He said, "This is what I've been trying to tell you all along. And finally, I have to go to Japan for you to understand it."
Exactly that. Yeah. What did I pay for in college? And my dad's really, really great at cussing. He taught me a few. He's like, "What did you learn in college?" And then, yeah, this is what I've been trying to tell you. Now, what he didn't have the ability to do at the time and ever really was show me, like, let's build a business around. I didn't understand the underlying philosophy, except that yes equals yes, and service was a thing, and quality was what you do next. Ben, and he was operating a business consistent with the principles and just didn't know it, didn't name it. You know, of course, we didn't have the knowledge, but what an endorsement I got of the thinking that day, standing in a factory where all of his body was saying yes, and I didn't know at that time what it meant to me.
Awesome intro there. That's great, Jeff. Jeff, where are you talking to us today from?
Yeah, the town is called Muckle, TO. My friends in Holland butcher it every time, and so do people in America. So just north of Seattle, if you know where Boeing makes big airplanes when they take off and are successful, I get to live. So if you ever hear a crash at the south end of that field, I'll be dancing in heaven or something. So yeah, so north it technically is Everett. Yeah, but Muckle, TO for your friends who like to learn new words.
In a previous life, at a
former employer of mine. I actually spent time in Everett teaching. We were a supplier to the same airline company. And I had an opportunity to go up and teach an intro course for lean and continuous improvement and fulfillment to that, to a group up there.
And that's so awesome. That's
a beautiful part of the country. I love it.
Oh, I'm thankful to be here for sure.
Well, before we get started with the interview, we always ask our guests to share with us a quote or a mantra from a favorite leader. I know in our pre-call, you said, I don't do quotes, but you said you would be ready for this question anyway. So can you give us the answer and tell us why you chose that answer?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just get it out. In the early part of the day is I'm a Christian, which basically means I believe Jesus is who he said he was. And I think I should probably be like him. And I know religion's kind of a weird thing, but when asked to explain like the whole Bible, he said, love God, love your neighbor. And so honestly, that's the mantra. Like if I'm doing my work in such a way that I bring glory to my maker, it's front and center every day. And loving my neighbor means that we do this, we do what you do what we do, try to really help the community. And honestly, when I see the pain at work, the idea that we can redeem work and actually have work be a blessing to people again, to connect in relationship, but also follow these laws of nature that exist. So yeah, it's what I remind myself constantly in the day is what does it look like to love my God, but really importantly, what does it mean to love my neighbor in this moment? And I basically fail every day at that, but occasionally it gets me going in the right direction.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you being open about your testimony, open about your beliefs here. I think that's refreshing at times. I can tell you that all of the major religions in the world are centered around that same principle of be good, do good, love one another. And I think that the fact that you're able to bring that into your workplace, into your personal life, that demonstrates the type of leader that you are. So I appreciate you sharing that quote with us today.
Yeah. 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 Thanks for not making me prepare really hard on that one. So
it came out naturally. So
it is what it is.
Perfect. Yeah. That can never, sharing your personal experiences can never be a prepared response.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah.
Well, one of my goals for this podcast, Jeff, is to help other leaders resonate with your experiences. So can you kind of tell us why you chose to follow lean as a profession in your organization and kind of how that story about that first trip in Japan with your dad and now how that's grown to your business? And then now how you're trying to spread that to other businesses.
Yeah, I can try to. How many minutes do you want of that?
It's a as lifetime, long as it really. Takes.
Yeah. I think the first impression was, this is true. I mean, I looked at it, I'm like, I think this is true, this whole idea of higher quality, lower costs, more lead time. But every company we went to, we thought it was like, oh, there's white guys here, so we're going to tell them it's all about people. And this is just me being stereotype and racist and all these things. And my consultant at the time, I'm like, man, you know, one thing I'm noticing in all these factories is this joy thing. Like I see sparkly eyes, like are Japanese people just super happy? And he's all, no. In fact, we'll go show you some unhappy Japanese people. They work in factories where they do batch push. So the part of me that was like not really getting it, I think in the early days was it is all about growing people. It's the blessing that we have to do work together. And if we cooperate with gravity, the work gets better. It took me many, many years. But so my initial, attraction to it was, I think it's true. And we are a custom manufacturer of things. So we didn't do batch push. That wasn't really our thing too much. But we kept also hearing that these are based in principles. And as before I even knew what it meant to be a Christian. So what is a principle? What is truth? I didn't know. So I think stage one was, boy, if we copy the tools, good things happen. But then later, we're like maybe a month or two after our trips to Japan, we're like, well, what do we do next? And because we didn't understand the principles and the laws governing work, we always had to keep going back. I think six trips in. Yeah, we spent a lot of money going to Japan and studying. And finally, like, oh, they're serious. It's about growing people. So that was like phase one. And we actually, at the end of that phase one, there was a meeting of myself and a couple of colleagues that still work here. Can we just agree that we don't understand it? And instead of spending all of our energy discussing whether it's true, let's copy them and spend all of our energy reflecting. but just let's take it all off. We're too stupid. Can we set our pride down? Can we just do it? And we started making some, I think, good progress. So that's phase one. And at that time, people started hearing that these people in Muckle Teal were implementing lean in the office and in everything. Cause we're like, if it's principle based, it must be true for everything. Can't just be the factory floor. And it was super weird that the business people are improving the factory floor and ignoring themselves. Like, what the heck is this? So we just started applying it. So the next phase was tours, having people coming in, and we did, we just allowed people to come in and like zoo animals and 3 or 4 hours a day, pretty much every day of the week, which got us to the point where we're teaching frequently. And you know, when you teach, you learn. And, I found myself in Holland, teaching a hospital, and, we were in front of a very large group, and not knowing Dutch people, we heard that they had a good sense of humor. So we made a story with a dog taking a shit in a building. Sorry, that's kind of not for your podcast, but, and we said, you know, so if you have this dog taking a dump in your house, do you have your kids call the emergency department or the cops? Do you have a meeting to polish that crap? Like, what do you do if there's crap in your living room? And they're all like, this is a stupid question. You just get rid of it. And then my question was, why is there so much shit in your hospital? Why is it that there's so many areas we're hurting our patients with political garbage, with structural garbage? Why is it that to treat a human being is so expensive and so opposite of what we see at Toyota? So I thought I was really, you know, giving them a licking. And at the end of it, this woman stood up, and I still have not found her yet. I'm going to find her. Jeff, who's the dog in your story? Who's the dog?
And?
Yeah.
What was the answer?
Yeah, I'm standing in front of a group of Dutch people I've never met before crying. It's me. I'm hurting my own family, my own customers. 99% of waste in any organization is freaking caused by leadership. I'm the dog. I need to go home now. That was a day one of a 10-day trip. Ruined me. Yeah. So that's kind of phase two. Phase three was really where I started to understand the Bible. I actually started reading it. You know, I'm a Christian, I hadn't read the Bible. So like, what the heck did I believe? I thought it was just, you had to be really stupid to believe. So I'm just like, okay, well, I want to go to heaven. Now I read it, I'm like, oh, you got to be really crazy to not believe. Like, that's so much easier to believe in Jesus than any of the other things. So I started learning that, oh, my ministry at work. My ministry is actually my garden. Oh, crap, it's here at work. Oh, we're not loving our people. And I'm still in that phase now. Is we have an intention to really show love and respect every day, and we don't do it. And that's really where we're at right now, is how do we systematically, conscientiously, rigorously engage each human being in a way that's loving and respectful and allow them to use this company to really fulfill their own potential, rather than what I want from them, which is a real shift for us. Does that give you enough of background?
That's awesome. I mean, I love storytelling because I think people can connect with a story. They understand the characters in the story. They can either make themselves the protagonist or the antagonist, depending on whether or not you want to be the dog or the person with the shovel. You create something that people will remember, and then they can apply it with what they see in their environment down the line. I also love the commitment that your workplace is like your work is your ministry. Your workplace is a ministry, and that's you know, when you minister to people, you're serving them as a leader. Yeah. So I think the important part here is that with the principles that you are applying, you can either subscribe to the higher power beliefs or not, but it gives you a better understanding of how the principles are applied, but you can still cut and paste and you'll learn along the way, but you won't have the same. That's why you do tours. Like, go there's ahead and copy us, please.
There's some very practical parts of the teaching in the Bible, right? So there's this idea that you just put on Christ. You're not supposed to go to church and say, okay, I'm so good, let me go to heaven. He basically says, just put me on, wear me as a jacket, try me on. And that's actually the thing that guided us to just put on lean, like just wear it. And what we found by putting it on, it was warm and it kept us dry. And oh, wow, there's some other cool stuff here. So So I believe that these principles actually align. I have some friends who are in a program that is not named. It's very anonymous. But when you know people who go there, it's confession, repentance. There's a system. There's a reality of these things kind of connect. And if you look through the thread, regardless of your worldview, there are laws that govern these things. So yeah. So I'm not, I guess, saying be a Christian, do lean. I'm saying that my story is that these two collided and it just knocked me off my chair a few times. Yeah. That's where I'm at right now. Basically on the floor. No joke. Like yesterday. Yeah. On the floor.
Well, you're sharing with us your successes with lean and continuous improvement and how that tailors in with your personal journey. I imagine there had to be moments where things didn't go quite as you had planned, where there were setbacks, you experienced failure. Can you share with us any pitfalls or mistakes that you went through in your lean journey and what you would want to share with our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, the number one thing is if you have authority in an organization, it's a gift. It's this opportunity for us to serve humanity with the things that we make in our company, but the people that are around us. So we became very, very good at building airplane parts that fly all over the world perfectly, furniture that is perfect, and even some of the touring things. We really focused our energy on the thing. And so the biggest mistake that I think I made very early on and still making today, and we're working on fixing that, is the thing is actually the human beings that are surrounding the furniture. And, so the biggest mistake, I'll say it's the learning that I get to go through today. So it's not about regrets, whatever, but the learning I get to go through today is this attention. Like, why haven't I applied these same principles to my marriage? Why is it that I expect that my wife will stay married to me because she has a ring on her finger as opposed to earning her hand every day? Why haven't I applied this to the growth of the young men and women who are here and build a systematic approach like we do, knowledge of standard work? All the principles that apply to building an airplane for sure apply to growing me and you. So I think the biggest mistake is really if we're a position of leadership or whatever, somehow somebody's willing to follow you, which if you really like understand that people are willing to follow you anywhere, that's a pretty devastating moment in your life if you think about that, especially if you look like me. But anyways, the big mistake is really not having the perspective of, hey, we get to grow together, we get to learn together, we get to build cool crap together. And oh, by the way, our customers are blessed because we use the laws of the universe to make this happen. So I think point number one is just really having that authority and not using it to bless people and having the energy. The outcome of building this system was great furniture. If I would have focused on growing people 10, 20, 30 years ago as intently as we will in the future, the furniture would have been even better. And more importantly, I would have engaged hundreds of people in their careers in a way that I didn't do. I can't undo that. That's the big mistake. That's the current fail. And every single mistake that if you buy the books that says, how do you screw up lean? The other version is we did batch, we did push, we did this, the absolute opposite. I came in and tried to fix you, my wife, tried to fix my employees, all the opposite things. So I guess having mentors who have gone through it, who I know that there are folks who sit in a seat that I have where I have the authority in a small little, you know, tiny little company. It's really different than being a coach. I actually have to make payroll and do this stuff. So I basically have to change the airplane while we're flying. And that's the challenge of leaders. And doing that alone is just way too painful, not so fun. So I didn't have the help that I needed to.
Well, a couple points that stand out there. Recently, I was in a podcast interview with Patrick Adams, and we were talking about how do you engage the entire organization in problem solving, and group think and group problem solving is better than relying on just two people in the organization to make all the decisions. It usually works out better. And then the other thing that kind of came to mind when you were talking about this is that you build customized things in your shop. Like you employ craftsmen, like you employ and craftswomen, you employ people who are creative and have skills and abilities. And if you just tell them, make this way every time, you're depriving the artisan of their ability to add their value to it, to create something better than just a print from a drawing. So as a leader in your organization, you have to focus on the people. Otherwise, what the result of what you want is not what you want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the blessing. That's the blessing. So a lot of people look and say, oh, you can't scale. Like, right. I can't scale like a mass producer. That's awesome. That means I have to do it in relationship. I would say also, though, that the product craft is for sure a thing, but the people part is also quite interesting. So meeting them where they're at and making sure that we're helping them along their journey. So it's a blessing that we have of being high mix, low volume. But there's stuff to standardize in that too, which is, if you go too far towards craft, you end up with a system that's not sustainable.
So finding that balance is a daily effort, right? I mean, it doesn't just happen. You don't just do it once and set it and forget it like a Ronco, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's very simple.
Well, there has to be a moment where everything just kind of clicked for you, like an aha moment or eureka. Some people, it occurs a little bit over time, but there's still an inflection point in our journey where we're like, okay, I'm on the right path. I'm doing the right things. With your lean and continuous improvement journey, what was kind of the moment for you that you realized this is it? This is what I need to be doing.
Yeah, well, for sure, the moment with my dad where he's like, yeah, dummy, hey, what are you doing? That's for sure. That is an event that's memorable. The end of that phase where I met with my colleagues and said, can we just copy? Let's just do it. I can picture that. I can picture the chairs all around it. It was a moment. For sure, standing and having the woman ask me, who's the dog, Jeff? And then more recently, through COVID, we did a little bit of work to do masks and shields during COVID. And another moment was I realized that I was leading the company 1 degree differently than the general manager, who is really, he's the conductor of the orchestra. And I'm maybe the person who writes the music. And that led to a massive chasm that I was not aware of. So the blessing of this kind of phase that we just went through is we had still not applied. So it's almost like we're like blind to what we were, you know, doing. And if we think about leadership and Kata in general and having a clear vision and moving in the direction together, if one of us is off 1 degree, it's a massive change. So I say the most recent realization was in the middle of mass and shields making things and me behaving really badly on a huddle where I realized, oh, you think this is a Jeff thing? Not a Jeff thing. It's a law of nature thing. We need to talk about that. And so we've doubled down on everything to do with flow. There's just, there's been a bunch of innovation, probably more innovation in the last 12 months than ever before on applying flow in new ways.
That's great. I think the thing about being misaligned is a lot of the work that we do with lean and continuous improvement, the easy stuff is finding the gross misalignments. I mean, that's the, you know, low hanging fruit or even the fruit that's just on the ground and you pick up and you walk through it. It's being able to, by being standardized, by being upfront with your principles, that allows you to see those small, miniature, 1 degree misalignments that over time, 1 degree for a day is not a big degree. It's not a big not a lot of separation. Over time, it's a chasm, like what you talked about. It's a gap that has to be closed. And what I also love is just your humility of that, hey, as a person, the one thing that all of my problems have in common is that I'm the root cause. All of my problems include me.
It's all good.
But you're okay with that. Like, you're, hey, I can be the root cause. And that means it's a lot easier to fix myself than it is to try and fix others. Right. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. 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 That's an interesting insight. As you said that, when we coach other companies to go through, sort of the tours that we do, and now we do it a little bit different way. we're constantly helping other organizations transform. That's, I would say that's my passion, is to help other leaders understand how much they can influence and actually create amazing good things for their companies. And it's very, very normal. Once you start moving to flow, you start seeing all the horrible things that have been happening. And so in your factory or whatever you happen to do, and there is a temptation to think that flow caused all that stuff. So when we do flow, it makes those problems visible. I know you've seen that. Well, when we start applying more of the flow principles to the way that we ran the business, the way we communicated, and the way we looked at ideas as the product, and was the idea landing? Was it getting anywhere? Boy, it became a very, very toxic place. Like, oh my gosh, it's so bad. So I guess that the blessing of moving to flow is you start seeing the problems. And without somebody like you coaching a guy like me saying, this is good, this is actually what you're trying to get to. So that's what your reply kind of made me think about is, yeah, without flow, we wouldn't have seen these things. We just seen the impacts.
I think about the other thing that's important with this, Jeff, is that when you feel that sense of overwhelmment where like everything appears all at the same time, you're not going to fix it all at the same time. Like, you just have to fix the next right thing. Like, and your folks, your team, the people that you serve as a leader, they'll tell you what you need to fix first. Like they usually if you give them a license, they'll go ahead and fix it themselves without having to ask for permission to do what's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what do you consider, or actually, I got a better question here. Do you have a lean or continuous improvement pet peeve or something that you frequently see being applied or done wrong in the work that you you do with sharing with others?
I think people, the pet peeve is the misunderstanding of what it is. So it's very normal for leadership to do it to the people. That's the main thing. So it's really just at the corner office. It's where I want to spend my time helping organizations. It's understanding that it's really our duty to create an organizational structure that allows flow to happen. And if you actually look at why doesn't flow happen in organizations, the structures are actually designed to prevent the left hand from knowing what the right hand does. So as you start looking at, well, who owns the org structure? It's always the corner office. And the good leaders will say, I didn't make it, but I'm going to fix it. I hear some leaders say, well, I didn't make it, it's not my fault. I'm like, yeah, but you're taking a big paycheck, so it's yours now, buddy. I think the pet peeve is that we don't understand it to be law of the universe kind of thing. And then we do it to people instead of applying it to our own work. And if we start applying it to our own work, I know you've heard it said, hey, what 80, 90, whatever percent of the waste is caused by the corner office. Okay. Well, that tells you that the biggest bat to remove waste in a system also resides in the corner office. Why do they go to the shop floor first? Hello. That's not where the problem is. That's where the effect is. So it's this, and I think it's trained into how people go to college. We learn specialties. We don't think end to end. I'm still trying to figure out why is this the case? But we're starting to see leaders who actually, once they see it, they flip. And when they flip, then it's like, okay, I get to talk to you in a couple of years. It's going to be awesome.
Enjoy the journey. You're on your way.
Yeah. Yep. Go.
What do you consider the most important thing that you've learned so far in your career journey?
Wow. Most important in my career journey. Well, the principles are true. And then if we follow principles, things work out. And so whether that comes from your faith or not your faith, there are just things that are true. Second law of thermodynamics, things go from order to disorder. Call it whatever you want, but things kind of follow that. And for business, if it's 90% true, that's close enough. So how many times have I been guilty of implementing something, telling somebody once and walking away going, yeah, I told you. So once we will give weight, I think, to the laws of the universe as they apply to work, and there are laws that absolutely apply to work. and look at how those are related to the outcomes that we're hoping to achieve together. This is our area of, I'll say ministry or work now today is, hey, what are the laws of the universe that are relevant to what you do? What do you know about those laws? Like, have you studied them? Do you actually understand that they're always true? And then of those laws, what do you treasure? So I would say a law of the universe is human beings, they just don't like to do waste. They just don't. So I can learn more and more about the seven wastes. I can learn about the tools to remove it. And then I can treasure living and breathing and doing things that have less waste. So then my plans should align to what align to that thing that I treasure, which hopefully drives my actions. And for sure, getting my principles and plans and actions aligned to principles, you know, then my outcomes kind of are much more predictable. So I had old guys come alongside me early in life and try to get this into my head. And not all of them are alive today, but I know that that's what they're trying to get to my head is, Jeff, principles in the long haul. Follow them, trust them. And we learned that a little bit, just loving neighbors. Like when we switched to the things we did for COVID, it was, we actually hired our customers to do stuff for us. Boeing was our logistics partner. Nordstrom sewed for us. Like our freaking customers became our suppliers. Like, so that's, you know, the love your neighbor thing kind of worked out, but it didn't make me a lot of money. In fact, lost a shit ton of money, but at the end of the day, we did some good stuff for some doctors and nurses that we left.
Well, that's when you know you have a good vendor client relationship, when it flows both ways. Like when it doesn't matter who's buying from one another.
Yeah, yeah. It was nuts.
I'm a good partner, right? I'm a good partner in this business.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Oh. What piece of advice would you give to someone who is just starting out with lean or continuous improvement, Jeff?
Sure, it depends on their context, right? So I would just say, for sure, it's true. There's enough in the public domain to this is not Kool-Aid. It reflects what's true in the laws of nature. Human beings love to make things. We're creative. We like to do it in community, tribes, whatever you call it. Thankfully, Toyota codified it, and the people studying Toyota have been able to understand things that even Toyota couldn't teach. So it's real close to a law of nature. If you're somebody who has authority, please use that authority to bless your teams. And know, people a lot of times say, "Well, it takes a lot of courage, or it takes a lot of you got to really have a lot of something other than knowledge." Which to me, once you have the knowledge, then it doesn't take courage. It just takes, you know, hard work. And So I think depending on the context, if you have authority, align yourself to principles, serve your people well. And if you don't know how to do that, ask for help. There's people like you, people like me, who will gladly spend time with leaders to say, it's always true. It's always 30% better. If it isn't 30% better, that means you screwed up. So promise, higher quality, lower cost, better lead time, more joy, more innovation. Always, 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 unless you screw it up. So Do you want to do it right? Yes or no? Yes. Okay, let's do it. So I ski on places that some people would look at and say, it takes a lot of courage. I'm like, no, it takes a lot of knowledge. And I'm not scared at all. In fact, I love the little tickle I get when I go climb on those things and jump off them. It doesn't take, it's not courageous. It's thrill. So getting that knowledge is if you're a leader, then that's a different deal. But don't let anybody be the reason you don't get started. You know, so pull that log out of your own eye. Don't worry about the log in other people's eye. Learn this stuff and apply it. And maybe try it at home first. If you apply these principles to make your life a little bit better, take care of your relationships and your own anxiety, you will find some cool stuff on the other side of that.
That's awesome. I think the thing that comes out when I'm listening to you talk about this is that you don't have to buy a membership to subscribe to these principles. You don't have to get approval to take care of improvement with yourself. And it just starts out with applying the principles in small, simplistic, low impact, easy ways to your own life. So look at your morning routine for how you get ready.
Yeah.
Look at how you, if you commute, how can you improve your commute? from that standpoint.
There is a risk though, when I say principles, of there being false information. So there is a real importance when I say follow principles, is I believe it's really important to have really good teachers. So like any good subject, there's a lot of bad information out there. So it's really, really important that you have a good teacher, because principles are very different than, these are always true, regardless of what somebody says. So I guess what I'm getting at is if I had bad teachers, I'd be in a bad place.
Well, that makes sense. You should have people that you like. You should have people that you trust. You should. That's the difference with. You can say a coach, but even the best people in the world at whatever they pursue, they have someone that they trust that has knowledge of about what the pursuit is, and will tell them the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, even when it's not what that person wants to hear. So cultivate relationships with people that will see your blind spots and say, hey, you're 1 degree off, you're 10 degrees off. Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, do you have a favorite book, author, or mentor that you would recommend to our listeners?
Oh, you have expanded categories. Yeah. So the book I read and actually read the words is the Bible. I don't really read any other books. However, anything that Mike Rother or Liker puts out is money. The mentor that really helps us the most on a real-time basis, his name is Mark Rosenthal. I think you might know him. He's just one of these gentle giants that we love spending time with. So we're spending a lot of time in the Toyota Kata study guide and our practice guide, and we are using that as our Hoshin planning tool. So we literally every day, work towards that. So,
I had Mark on a previous episode of the podcast. He also blogs at The Lean Thinker. A really good person to have as a sounding board for your lean principles and guidance.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody's ever stuck, just ping him. He'll be so happy to help you. Like that's when I say source of truth. I think he helped edit the Toyota Kata practice guide. So he really, really knows his stuff.
Well, Jeff, at this point in our careers, you and I both know that magic wands don't exist. But if they did exist and you could fix anything with a group that you're consulting with or coaching or even in your own environment, what would you typically wave that magic wand at first to try to fix or improve?
Context matters. So we have a model that we use for just thinking through. So we use thinking models to understand something so that we can. So one of those thinking models is head, heart, hands. So I'll look at the hands and say, what are the hands doing? And that tells me a lot about what their heart cares about and what their head knows. So the thing I find most often people with authority is many have a heart of service, but they don't know how to use it. And so they really lack the head knowledge of knowing that this is a trustworthy set of principles they can move forward. So if I can, for those people that I can see that you have the heart and you'll do stuff, you have the authority to do stuff, but you don't get it. The magic wand would be, I wish you could see what I could see. I wish you could know. The flip of that is there are a lot of people who actually know, like they can tell you everything, but their heart is not in it. They don't give a darn about the people. I wish I could give them the experience of a soldier or a family who lost a soldier, the sacrifices we made, that we get to work together so that they could understand that their position in life is really to serve others. And I'd want to wave my hand and break their heart. Because if you have the head and you understand the knowledge and a heart that cares, the hand stuff is so fun. It's so fun. The work is fun. But it's one of those two things that are usually off. And that is the thing is, hit them on the head. They have the knowledge and a passion for serving, because then we can get to work. We can do stuff.
And be able to see what you see from your experiences through time of the difference between knowing and not doing versus, you know, just not doing and altogether. Right. That's almost even worse. It's like when you know it's the right thing to do and you don't do it.
Yeah. So to me, it's a moral issue. So it's not a business issue. It's a moral issue. If you know to do good and you know that you can deliver 30% more value to everybody in the deal and you choose not to do that. Oh, and by the way, if you leave that waste in the system, you're causing anxiety. You're causing people to have shit jobs. You're sending home men and women to their families to say work sucks. If that doesn't fit the definition of morally corrupt, I don't know what does. So the minute somebody understands this is a moral problem that has business outcomes and ramifications and family ramifications, we could run like crazy with them. If they think of this as just, oh, I'm just going to make more money, then yeah, I don't care. I'm not going to help them. So yeah. Yeah. And it's not religious. Moral is just, you talk to, and I live in Seattle, so there's really nobody who believes in the Bible out here. So it's great. You can get to, hey, I'm going to describe a leader who knows how to make life better for everybody, but they instead organize the system to make sure you never know the truth, make sure that you're always in fear, to make sure that you can't actually do the things you know how to do. Is that corrupt? And even in Seattle, they'll agree to that. They go, yeah, that's morally wrong, which in Seattle, everything's morally okay, except that, evidently. Yeah, so like literally everybody agrees that a leader who does that should be shot. Not yeah. So anyways, yeah.
We don't want you to be shot, but we definitely do want you to subscribe, just to try it, run the experiment. It's a better way, sure. I promise you. Just try it, right?
Yeah. Oh, Kool-Aid Bill, Jeff, doesn't it?
How can people connect with you if they want to learn more about what you or your company or your consulting firm do, and if they just have a question for you about what we talked about today?
Yeah. So the easiest way is to text me. I think you'll put my cell number on your show notes. FaceTime me. I live to serve other people in this. We put a bunch of public, we have YouTube, there's information in the world about us, who we are. But don't be alone. This is actually fun. This should not be overwhelming. And I needed three or four men and women in my life to come alongside me and say, this is actually, something fun to do. So yeah, call me, text me. Yeah. Of course, websites and all those fun things too.
All right. This is an unfair question because I didn't prep you on this one. So I'm gonna throw here. So you started off the conversation about a trip to Japan with your dad, right?
Yeah.
And those that follow you on LinkedIn and follow your company know that now you are the father and you're employing others within your business. Can you tell me a little bit about what it's like working with your family now when you're the patriarch?
Oh, gosh darn. Frick, dude, that's a dirty, really good play though. Oh man, gosh, yeah. I can try. I can try. I got to go to a football game two weeks ago, to be honored for what we chose to do during COVID. I got to be with my dad. And my son and my brother-in-law. Pretty special to have a dad recognized. Yeah. Yeah, but there's people here that are darn near family too. That aren't related. Yeah, sorry.
No, hey,
recording is going to be rough on that one. Sorry.
No, that's fair. It's that, but I think that. So I didn't mean to put you on the spot there.
No,
like
it's all
that
good.
In that way, but
no, it's good.
But I think that shows the level and depth of passion you have for the people that you work with. Yeah, your sons are working with you now and. That's not the extent of your family because your work family is everybody you work with. Like it's like you feel that sense for them and that comes through. But, every leader learns from a leader. So,
No, thanks for asking the question. The element of family is a thing, but, I've seen lives change radically through, and if you ask me too many questions about the other lives that we see here, I get to the same moment because I think it's a privilege to be in a place is to watch somebody get unstuck and do something amazing. So, yeah.
All right. Jeff, thank you for being a guest on the podcast. I hope we can have you back again soon. I appreciate you sharing your experience with us. Folks that are listening, be sure to check out the show notes page, find out more about Jeff, his company, what he does. Jeff Koss, thank you for your time today.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
I want to thank Jeff for being on the podcast today. I got a lot out of the conversation, and I hope that you did as well. Be sure to go to the show notes page at leanleadershippodcast.com and check out the links to learn more about Jeff and how to connect with him if you have a question about what we talked about today. As always, I welcome your feedback on how to improve the podcast. If you like the podcast, make sure to go to podchaser.com/leanleadershippodcast and leave a rating for the podcast. Thank you for listening, and until next time, seek progress over perfection.
Thanks for listening to the Lean Leadership Podcast with Chris Burnham. Get more info, resources, tools, or connect at leanleadershippodcast.com.